Hello, and welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. Tonight we bring you a classic tale of suspense, written by an obscure Spanish author named Pedro de Alarcón, called simply The Nail. The first English publication of the tale was translated for a series called Mystery and Detective Stories, edited by Julian Hawthorne and published in 1907. Now, we hope you enjoy this audio presentation of Pedro de Alarcón's The Nail by the Maplewood Barn Radio Players.
The stagecoach was empty when I opened the carriage door at exactly 11 o'clock on a stormy night in the autumn of 1844. I thought it was going to be a lonely trip, but a few minutes later, the door opened and she entered. I thought at first that I was dreaming. There before me was a pale, graceful, beautiful woman, dressed in deep mourning. Here was the fulfillment of a dream, a beautiful traveling companion. I extended my hand to help her into the coach, and she sat down beside me.
Thank you, sir. Good evening.
Are you well, madam? From your voice, you sound ill.
I am quite well, thank you.
Are you going to Malaga?
Yes.
Did you like the Alhambra?
No.
You come from Granada?
Yes.
Isn't the night damp?
Awful.
It was evident that my traveling companion was not inclined to conversation, yet she interested me. Why was she alone? Was she really a widow? Why was she so sad? But I had no right to ask such questions. The unknown lady did not sleep a wink during the night. I could tell this by her quiet sighing. Finally, I worked up the courage to ask, "Are you sure you're not ill?"
"No, sir, thank you. I beg pardon if I have disturbed your sleep."
"Well, not at all. I feared you were suffering."
"Oh, no, I am not suffering."
At last the sun rose. How beautiful she was! What deep suffering lined her face! She was elegantly dressed and evidently belonged to a good family. After some time, she became more companionable, and I said to myself, "Philip, you have met your fate. It's now or never." Yet I soon regretted the very first word I mentioned to her regarding my feelings. "If I may be so bold, and with all due respect, it seems you would be an easy lady to love."
"It is not because of you, sir, but love itself is something that terrifies me."
"Why, dear lady?"
"Because my heart is dead. Because I have loved to the point of delirium, and I have been deceived."
I could have talked to her in a philosophic way, and there were many platitudes on the tip of my tongue, but I refrained. When we arrived at Malaga, she said to me,
"Thank you for your kind attention during the trip, and I hope you will forgive me if I do not tell you my name and address."
"Do you mean, then, that we will not see each other again?"
"Never. And you should not regret it. If you care to help, pray to God for me."
Two months later, I met her again. That afternoon, I was traveling on the road that leads to Cordoba. The reason for my journey was to pass 3 or 4 weeks with one of the judges of the Supreme Court, who was an intimate friend and had been my schoolmate at the University of Granada. He received me with open arms as I entered his handsome house.
"Philip, it's good to see you again."
"Ah, Zarco, it appears that you have married and never told me about it. Your house is so gorgeously decorated."
"Thank you, but I'm not married, and never will marry."
"What a metamorphosis. You have always been a strong proponent of marriage. Why the change, dear friend? Did something unfortunate happen to you?"
"Yes, yes. I will tell you all. No one is more unfortunate than me in the affairs of the heart. But listen, this is the day of the dead, the day when all the townspeople go to the cemetery, and I must be there, if only for form's sake. Come with me, It is a pleasant afternoon, and the walk will do you good. On our way, I will tell you about the incident that ruined my life, and you can judge yourself whether my hatred of women is justified.
As we walked together along the road, my friend told me the following story.
2 years ago, when I was the assistant district attorney in Cordoba, my chief gave me permission to spend a month in Seville. In the hotel where I lodged, there was a beautiful young woman who passed for a widow, but whose origin, as well as her presence there, was a mystery. Her wealth, her lack of friends, and the sadness of her expression, together with her incomparable beauty, created a great deal of gossip.
Yes, I understand.
Her rooms were directly opposite mine, and after 2 weeks, fate threw us together. I had been to the theater that night and perhaps had a bit too much wine. When I returned to my hotel, I thoughtlessly opened the door of her apartment instead of my own. The beautiful woman was reading by the light of a lamp. I was so embarrassed by my mistake, I could only stammer. There could be no doubt that I had made a mistake. I turned toward the door, intending to leave as quickly as possible, when she said to me in the most exquisite voice,
"In order to show that I do not doubt your good faith and that I'm not at all offended, I beg that you will call upon me again, intentionally."
3 days passed before I got up the courage to accept her invitation. Yes, I was madly in love with her. She told me that her name was Blanca and that she was born in Madrid and she was a widow. Every word she said increased my love for her. On that night, my soul became her slave forever.
I see.
I called on her again the following night and every night after that. We had fallen in love. One evening, she said to me,
"I married a man without loving him. Shortly after the marriage, I hated him. Now he is dead. Only God knows what I have suffered. Now I understand what love means. It is either heaven or hell. For me, up to the present time, it has been hell."
I could not sleep that night. I lay awake thinking over those last words of Blanca's. Somehow, this woman frightened me. Could she be my hell? Soon after, my leave of absence expired. I could have asked for an extension, pretending illness, but the question was, should I? I consulted Blanca.
"Why do you ask me?"
"Because I love you. Am I wrong in loving you?"
"No."
"Well, I asked for another month, and it was granted. My relations with Blanca were more than love. They were delirium, madness, fanaticism, call it what you will. Every day my passion for her increased. I asked her to marry me, but she refused. Finally, my leave of absence expired. I told her, tomorrow we must separate."
"Separate? Impossible. I love you too much for that."
"But you know, Blanca, that I worship you."
"Then give up your profession. I am rich. We can comfortably live out our lives together."
"I would accept this offer from my wife, although it would be a sacrifice for me to give up my career. But I cannot accept it from a woman who refuses to marry me."
"I will be your wife, and I will not ask you to give up your profession. Go back to your office. How long will it take you to secure another leave of absence and return to Seville?"
"A month."
"A month? Then here I will wait for you. Return within a month, and I will be your wife. Today is the 15th of April. You will be here on the 15th of May."
"You may rest assured of that."
"You swear it?"
"I swear it."
"You love me?"
"More than life."
"Go then, and return as quickly as possible. Farewell."
I left the same day. The moment I arrived home, I requested another leave of absence and arranged my affairs so quickly that at the end of 2 weeks, I returned to Seville and went immediately to the hotel where we had first met. She was not there. I learned that Blanca had left 2 days after my departure without telling anyone of her destination.
"That must have been distressing."
"Yes, you can imagine my disappointment my suffering. She went away without leaving so much as a note. 3 days later, I gathered up my legal work and began trying to forget her.
A few moments after Zarco finished his story, we arrived at the cemetery. It was only a small plot of ground covered with crosses and surrounded by a low stone wall. As often happens in small Spanish cemeteries, it is sometimes necessary to dig up one coffin in order to bury another. The remains of the disinterred are thrown in a heap in a corner of the cemetery, where skulls and bones are piled up like a haystack. As we passed by, Zarco and I looked at the skulls, wondering who they might have been, rich or poor, noble or plebeian. Suddenly, the judge bent down, picked up a skull, and exclaimed,
"Look here, my friend. What is this? There's a nail driven into the top of the skull. The point has penetrated into his mouth."
"What does this mean?"
"I recognize the hand of Providence. A terrible crime has been committed. I will do my duty and not rest until I have the assassin on a scaffold."
My friend Zarco was one of the finest criminal judges in Spain. Within a few days, he discovered that the corpse was that of Don Alfonso Gutierrez Romeral. He was a native of this village and died suddenly of apoplexy at the age of 31. He was married to Doña Gabriela Zahara de Val, a native of Madrid, and left no heirs.
"Now everything is clear as day, and I am positive that within a week the assassin will be arrested. The apoplexy in this case happens to be an iron nail driven into the man's head, which brought quick and sudden death to Señor Romeral. I have the nail, and I will soon have the hammer."
According to the testimony of the housekeeper, which was corroborated by neighbors, Señor Romeral was a rich young landowner who originally came from Madrid, where he had married a beautiful wife. About 4 months after they were married, her husband passed away. The couple had frequent quarrels. They hardly spoke to one another in those last few days. On the night he died, they were together in Señor Romeral's bedroom, and about midnight, the wife rushed hysterically out of the room and cried out,
"Apoplexy! Run for a doctor! My poor husband is dying!"
By the time the doctor arrived, Señor Romeral was dead. The diagnosis was cerebral congestion, but according to the doctor's report, no one had closely examined the top of the dead man's head, where the nail would be hidden by hair. I have issued a warrant for the arrest of Doña Gabriela Zahara del Val, widow of Señor Romeral.
Do you think you will ever capture this woman?
I'm positive of it.
Why?
Because when the bones come out of the tomb to testify, there is little for a judge to do.
In spite of the hopes of my friend, Gabriela was not found, and 3 months later she was, according to the laws of Spain, tried, found guilty, and condemned to death in absentia. I returned home with a promise to visit Zarco the following year. I spent that winter in Granada. One evening, I had been invited to a great ball given by a prominent Spanish lady. As I was mounting the stairs of the magnificent residence, there she stood, my unknown, the mysterious woman of the stagecoach. She recognized me at once.
"Ah, my traveling companion."
"Señora, what a joy to see you again."
"How are you?"
"In truth, I don't know. My happiness depends on your happiness. May I ask if your wounded heart has healed?"
"There are some wounds which never heal."
And with that, she turned her back on me to speak to an acquaintance. I asked a passing servant who she was, and was told she was a South American whose name is Mercedes de Montalban. The following day, I paid a visit to the lady, who received me as if I were an intimate friend. During our hours together, she spoke of many things, but we always returned to the subject of disappointed love, and I told her the story of my friend, Judge Zarco. She listened to me very attentively.
Oh, let that be a lesson to you. Don't fall in love with women you don't know. As for me, there is no risk of falling in love. I never speak three times to the same man.
Signora, are you telling me that I cannot see you anymore?
No, but I leave Granada tomorrow, and we will never...
Never? You told me the same thing during our memorable ride in the stagecoach. Your prophecies are suspect.
Well, let us leave that to fate. For my part, I repeat that I am bidding you farewell.
Then she turned with a graceful bow and descended the stairway which led to the upper story of the hotel. I was annoyed at her for walking away, yet this emotion was tempered with the pity I felt for her suffering. If only that had been the last time I would see her. Man proposes, but God disposes. A few days later, business brought me to the town where my friend Judge Zarco lived. I found him as lonely and as sad as at the time of my last visit. He had been able to find out nothing about Blanca, but could not forget her. This woman was his fate, his heaven, or his hell. The evening of my arrival, we were seated in his office, reading police reports about the search for Gabriella, when an officer entered and handed the judge a note.
There is a woman at the Hotel of the Lion who wishes to speak with me. A woman? To see me? What do you think, Philip?
It is your duty as a judge to answer the call. Perhaps she will give you some information about Gabriella.
Yes, of course. You're right.
He put a revolver in his pocket, threw his cloak over his shoulders, and went out. 2 hours later, he returned, elated.
Oh, my friend! I'm the happiest man in the world.
What is it?
That note that came from the hotel was from her.
From whom? From Gabriella Zahara?
No. It was her. My love. My life. My Blanca.
Blanca? But the woman deceived you.
Oh, no. That was all a foolish mistake on my part.
What do you mean?
When Blanca and I parted in mid-April... we agreed to meet again 1 month later. Shortly after I left, she received a letter calling her to Madrid on urgent family business, where she stayed for 2.5 weeks. But, as you know, I could not wait. I returned 2 weeks before we had agreed. When she wasn't at the hotel, I jumped to the conclusion that she had deceived me, and I did not wait. I have gone through 2 years of torment and suffering, all due to my own stupidity.
But she could have left you a note.
She was so upset she didn't even think of it.
Well, my friend, when is the marriage?
Don't laugh. You're going to be my best man.
With pleasure. Man proposes, but God disposes. We were still seated in the library, chatting together, when there was a knock at the door. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. A moment later, a man dashed into the library so breathless from running that he could barely speak.
Good news, Judge. Great news. We've got her.
You mean, Mr. Prosecuting Attorney, that you people have arrested Gabrielle Zahara?
Yes, sir. We have her. One of our detectives caught her, and she's locked up in a prison cell.
Then let's not tarry. We will interrogate her tonight. Tell the guard to bring the skull of Senor Romeral. It is my opinion that this woman cannot deny the horrible murder when she is confronted with the evidence of her crime. So far as you are concerned, Philip, I appoint you assistant secretary so that you can be present without violating the law.
I did not answer. A horrible suspicion had been growing in me, and it was tearing at my heart. Could Gabriella and Blanca be one and the same? I clung to the slender hope that Gabriella and Blanca were not the same person, but I felt ill. We arrived at the prison at 4 o'clock in the morning. The guard, holding a black box containing the skull of Signor Romeral, was waiting for us. We took our seats at a long table with the judge at its head.
Bring in Donna Gabriela Zahara.
Instead of watching the door, I looked at the judge. I saw him turn livid and clutch his throat with both hands.
Ah! It is her!
Keep quiet. I suspected that was the case.
No, there must be some mistake.
Judge, remember your duty.
But I... Of course, you're right.
Then I turned and looked at the accused. Good God. Gabriela Zahara was not only Blanca, the woman my friend so deeply loved, but she was also the woman I had met in the stagecoach and subsequently at Granada, the beautiful South American Mercedes. All these fantastic women had now merged into one, the real one who stood before us, accused of murdering her own husband, and who had been condemned to die. But she showed no emotion. She looked calmly round the room, recognizing me as she gazed. The judge now seemed to awaken from his stupor and asked in a harsh voice,
"What is your name?"
"Gabriela Zahara, widow of Romeral."
Zarco trembled. He had just learned that his Blanca had never existed. She told him so herself. She who only 3 hours before had consented to become his wife. Then he pulled himself together and turned toward the guard.
"Open the black box. Madam, tell me whether you recognize this head."
Alfonso! Alfonso!
She is guilty beyond a doubt.
"Do you recognize the nail which deprived your husband of life?"
"Yes, sir."
"That is to say, you admit that you murdered your husband."
"Sir, I do not care to live anymore. But before I die, I would like to make a statement."
"What has she possibly got to say?"
"I am going to confess. Why should I deny the self-evident? I was alone with my husband when he died. The servants and the doctor have testified to this. Hence only I could have killed him. Yes, I committed the crime, but another man forced me to do it."
"And what is the name of that man, madam? Tell us at once."
"With a single word, I could drag him into the depths with me, but I will not. No one shall ever know his name, for he once loved me, and I love him. Yes, I love him, although I know he will do nothing to save me."
"Be careful. You will betray yourself."
"I was forced to marry a man I hated. I lived 3 years in martyrdom. One day a man came into my life that I loved. He was a man of exceptional character, high and noble, whose only fault was that he loved me too much. He demanded that I marry him. What could I do? I was bound to a vile man whom I loathed. Well, I killed this man, believing that I was committing an act of justice. And when my lover left me, I knew that God was punishing me. And now I am very, very tired of life. And all I ask of you is that death may come as quickly as possible. Your Honor, please grant my request that I may die soon."
"Guard, remove this prisoner."
The next day, in spite of the emotional struggle he went through, the judge confirmed the death sentence. After signing his name to the document, he turned to me.
"There are some papers that I must take to the Court of Appeals in Madrid. Wait here until I return. Take care of the unfortunate woman, and I will plead her case in the upper court. Farewell, and please forgive all the worry I have caused you."
The day after the judge left, Gabriela Zahara was placed in the death cell. The morning of the execution came, and still the judge had not returned. The scaffold had been erected in the corner of the square, and an enormous crowd had gathered. I stood by the door of the prison, hoping for a word with the condemned before she ascended the scaffold. As she passed, I said to her, "I am here, Signor. Can I be of service?"
"Thank you. This is a great consolation for me in my last hour of life. Guard, may I speak to my friend?"
"Only for a minute."
"Thank you. Where is he?"
"He is not here."
"May God bless him. Please ask him to forgive me, even as I believe God has already forgiven me. Tell him I love him, even though this love is the cause of my death."
"Come on, let's move along."
"Tell him that I died blessing him."
Slowly she ascended the steps of the scaffold and was guided to the center of the platform, over the trap door. The noose was fastened around her neck. She stood completely motionless, her sad, dark eyes looking above the heads of the crowd at the sky. Suddenly, there came a roar like thunder.
"Pardoned! Pardoned!"
It was the judge, galloping madly toward the scaffold.
"Pardoned! You are pardoned!"
Gabriella gave the judge a look of infinite love and gratitude.
"God bless you."
Then she took two steps forward and walked off the scaffold. The rope went taut over the edge of the platform. All their efforts to revive her were useless. Gabriella Zahara was dead.
And so ends the sad story of Gabriella Zahara, who led many different lives and enamored many different men. Why did she take her own life in the end? We leave that for you to decide. This has been Maplewood Barn Radio Theater's presentation of The Nail, adapted from a short story by Pedro de Alarcón. Our performers this evening were Steve Jones as Philip. Carrie Butters played Judge Sarko. Elena Scott portrayed Blanca, Gabriella, and the housekeeper. Jeff Martin was the neighbor and the prosecutor, and Brad Buchanan was the guard. The show was engineered by Darren Helwich and adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan. Amy Humphrey and Joe Hayes of the band Clatter did the post-production work. We hope you have enjoyed this Maplewood Barn Radio Theater production and that you will join us again next week for another classic story, right here on KBIA.